It's 30 years since the publication of the Vatican document on the family, Familiaris Consortio. The apostolic exhortation of Pope John Paul II was born after the 1980 Bishop's Synod on the family. Dr. David Thomas was an advisor to the US bishops at this international meeting in Rome. In this podcast, he recalls the reaction to the publication of Familiaris Consortio and highlights its most important sections. So was this the first Vatican document to focus on the family?
Not the very first time, but certainly the very first time there was extended discussion about the family. You might call an in-depth discussion. The family was mentioned briefly in the documents of Vatican II. There is a paragraph in Pope Paul VI's document on evangelization, paragraph 71, if you want to check it out, that speaks about evangelization and the family and said some very important things. But really, not until John Paul II wrote this response, an exhortation, I guess it's called. So it's not necessarily called an encyclical, but his response to the Synod. We have there 64,000 words, I believe, of discussion about the family, which is probably 100 more times longer than anything we've had up to then. And since then, I might add, because there has not been any major further document about the family. There's been a lot of quoting of this document, Familiaris Consortio, and other writings of John Paul II and some of the writings of Pope Benedict XVI. But that's the Magna Carta. That's the great reservoir of insight about the church and its relationship to family in our time.
So how do you feel then when we reflect back on the point that you made when you were listening in to that radio piece when they said, oh, and you know, there's been a major document released by the Vatican on the family in the hand of Pope John Paul II. Basically, it just affirms the church's position on contraception.
Well, not surprised, first of all. I mean, that's oftentimes the way the media does respond to things by the church. But then, of course, then I went and secured a copy of it and all of that sort of thing. And, you know, have probably read it maybe 20 times since then. It's one of those documents you can reread. And some of its sections are so powerful, I think, that they deserve a rereading because we forget about the spiritual truths that are inherent in that document. It's wordy, as are many documents, papal documents. Right after it came out, I was serving as a theological consultant to the United States bishops. We had a meeting of the Bishops' Committee on Family. And there were six bishops there and probably about a dozen other advisees to the committee. And I was asked to do a summary of it, which I was happy to do. But before I began, I asked those who were assembled, including the bishops, how many of you read the entire document? Three. Three people. And this was the Bishops' Committee on Marriage and Family Life. So that says something about these documents. We rarely read them front to back, top to bottom. And that may not be the worst thing in the world either, but we should be at least familiar with some of its general ideas and some of its most important sections. So maybe I could highlight a couple of those for you right now.
Yeah, bring us towards those things that really we shouldn't miss 30 years on.
One of the things the Pope talks about is the relationship of the family to the church. Now, he'll also talk about the relationship of family to society, but I want to focus on the church piece because that's where I think some new ground was actually created. Second Vatican Council, when it talked about the family briefly in the document on the church, went back to the early times, the early part of the church's history, where some of the writers, St. Augustine, St. John Chrysostom, and others, talked about the family as what they called the domestic church or the church of the home. We have to go back and think about what the church looked like at that time. It was not the church of dioceses and large parishes or anything like that. The papacy itself was just basically the Bishop of Rome and the influence that he exerted, you know, in around the Roman Empire at that time, which, as we know now, was diminishing, you know, come the 3rd, 4th century. So what did the church look like? Well, it was basically gatherings. It was gatherings of believers to pray together, to celebrate the Eucharist, to listen to the Word of God, and to reaffirm each other in their practice of the faith. I think one of the most important parts of the early church's, you might say, sense of mission had a very interesting family dimension to it. What the church did out of its pastoral sense of reaching out to those in need to, in a sense, embody the commandment of love of God and love of neighbor, to live out, you know, the social mission of the church, as we call it today, one of the first places that they attended to or one of the first settings they responded to was widows and orphans. They were drawn into the community, adopted by the community, and made members of that community. So the original churches, if you will, were more like extended families. And so that sense of church as family, not so much the nuclear family as we understand it today, but this broad sense of family, which included, they would say, the communion of saints, those who had passed on before us, and so forth, as part of the community. All of these were very meaningful terms for these people in terms of the structures of those communities. So that sense of family, which brought these early writers of the church, theologians and fathers like Augustine and Chrysostom, as I mentioned, to, in a sense, identify the family as part of the church. In other words, not separate them. It was not the church and the family, but it was the family in the church or the church in the family. That sense was picked up by, as I say, the Second Vatican Council briefly in its document on the church, expanded in the writings of Pope Paul VI, when he wrote about evangelization, where he said, and this is a quote, "In every family, in every Christian family, you will find all the essential aspects of the church in each and every family." Well, what are those aspects? Well, it's celebration, it's worship, it's prayer, it's service, it's ministry, it's proclamation, it's teaching, it's learning, it's living the life of our faith in love and in faith, but in a family way. That is the key insight that was then picked up by John Paul II in Familiaris Consortio, where he basically said, as the family goes, so goes the church. As the family is an intense and vital community of the church, a vital cell, he uses that word, a cell of the church, like the cell in the body, so too will the whole church be. You cannot separate family life from church life. They are just two aspects of the same exact reality. Now, do people, most Catholics, understand that? I don't think so. Because we also have a history of separating the church from the family. I mentioned earlier on in a podcast that, you know, I went to the seminary and to the religious life back in the 60s. One of the things that was common then in terms of the language of the church is that when one did that sort of thing, one left their family. They left their family. They joined another entity, another community. We left the world and we entered something else. Family was part of the world, not part of the church. Now, what John Paul II has done, and in really reflecting the thought, I think, and insight of earlier popes, was he combined the two, saying that in a sense, the family exercises and is involved in the life of the church through its own life. As I like to put it sometimes, the family does not go to church. The family is the church.
Dr. David Thomas there, who was an advisor to the US bishops at the 1980 Bishops' Synod on the Family in Rome.